Hello, and welcome back to the Truly Horrible Podcast.
Hello, listeners.
Truly Horrible NBA Podcast.
Truly Horrible NBA Basketball Podcast of Podcasts.
I'm your host, Connor Allen, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Daniel Porter.
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
All right. To start off, we start off as we always do, correcting the mistakes from last time. There were some bad ones this time.
We are committed to getting better. Someday we might even have a mistake-free podcast.
That's the dream. Unfortunately, on the last episode, I said that the Orlando Magic traded for Jody Meeks when he had 3 years left on his contract. Unfortunately, he had actually signed a three-year contract, but was entering the last year of his contract. So, my apologies, I was harsh on that move, and when you're just trading for a guy with 1 year left, it's much less problematic.
Humiliating mistake.
Yeah.
Wherever Jody Meeks is, we are so sorry. Mm-hmm. And whoever made the move, was that before or after
Magic changed that GM? Before.
Okay, so that was a Hennigan
move? Yeah.
All right, apologies to Rob Hennigan.
Yeah, he's redeemed himself with Daniel's eyes, so.
Yeah, right. Well.
All right.
Anyways.
Moving on to my favorite part of each week is when we read the five-star review of the week.
Keep leaving those. We're up to 11 five-star reviews now.
Yeah.
Which is great. You could now almost not fit all of our five-star reviewers in an elevator.
Yeah.
Think about that. Yeah, that'd be a very tight, squeezed elevator.
Oh, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought about it that way. I wonder which number would push it over where you can't fit them in an elevator. I mean, it
depends a lot on the elevator.
True. Some elevators, they already couldn't fit. Yeah, but that's a good point. They would fit a lot more.
A freight elevator? Yeah.
Ooh, true.
We're looking for the freight elevator number, five-star review, so keep going, folks.
All right, so this one is titled Daniel Porter for NBA Commissioner by That Main on the Store. Daniel seems level-headed. Connor seems like the type of guy to put a 6-point from the opposite three-throw line if given unchecked power, then pull a wild hypothetical situation to facilitate the need for a 6-pointer out of thin air. Either way, it's a great dynamic between the co-hosts and a very enjoyable listen. Also, here's a fun drinking game. Take a drink every time they say surplus and die within 25 minutes of every episode. Two things.
All right.
6-point line. Definitely necessary.
Decent idea. We can talk about that if we have extra time at the end of the pod.
Second thing, the Truly Horrible NBA podcast does not endorse the drink every time we say surplus because
that seems unhealthy. We do say surplus quite a bit. And also, if people want to start kind of like a guerrilla movement to make me NBA commissioner, I certainly wouldn't be mad. I think I would have to like go to law school and work in the NBA for 25 years first.
But look, you do a better job. The worst
career path.
You do a better job than Dave Silver. So
I would be much more receptive towards tanking. You know, I would never try to like institute the Colangelo family in an NBA front office because the previous general manager was embarrassing the league.
Dude, I don't know. Find a new slant.
That is a normal collar, Connor.
So moving on. So today, obviously, draft is in 3 days. So the plan is to kind of dive into the draft prospects. We're going to focus on the top 10 because all our teams have top 10 picks besides the Nets.
And then a lot of our teams also have later picks too. Yep. Just in general, it's fun to talk about potential steals. You know, you got the Suns at 16. You got Brooklyn at, or Atlanta at 19. You got Brooklyn at 29.
The Magic have like the 41st pick in the second round.
And the 35th.
And the 35th. Yeah,
all these teams have their own second rounders for the most part.
And all guys who are late first projections are very much candidates to end up going in the early second.
There'll be a couple guys in the first who aren't even really on our radar screens right now, I'm sure.
Yeah, Papayannis.
Exactly. Although that was the 13th pick.
That was crazy.
It's not a Papayannis every year. But it is fun. It's so fun when you're watching the draft on ESPN and someone gets picked and nobody knows who the hell they are.
And it's like, all right.
Anyways, yeah. Fucking Raleigh Atkins or whatever. Yeah. Just got picked 15.
Jalen Rose is like, he's not in my notes.
Exactly.
All right.
I wonder if Jalen Rose has Zanon Musa notes.
Ooh, probably not.
Like Jalen Rose isn't watching Zanon Musa's YouTube highlights yet, but he'd probably like him.
But he probably has Moritz Wagner notes, lots of them.
True. I mean, Moritz Wagner is solid. Not to put the cart before the horse, but, you know, I wouldn't mind. The thing about Moritz Wagner is there's a lot of centers, but I wouldn't mind, like, a flyer on him.
He was really good in the early second?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Love him as an early second round pick. Think he has a place in the league, but I don't think he is ever going to start.
Right. Also, certainly funny. Not. I mean, look, if Aaron Baines starts, there's guys who can true. Start.
He could start. Know? You're right.
But certainly not as a guy who you like pencil in as a multiple year.
And doesn't finish the game for you. That's another probably key distinction true. Now in the NBA for guys like him.
Yep.
Funny that our first prospect we talked about in our draft pod was Moritz Wagner, and we really dove in there. Truly horrible.
Right. Do these guys even plan? So we could talk about our top 10.
Yeah, that's the plan here. So we're just going to go through our top 10s, kind of discuss the guys. Our top 10s are similar but different. We have a general idea of who each of the other person likes. But we're going to talk about them, talk a little about fit, talk a little about ways we see it working with each prospect and ways we don't see it working with each prospect, and really of course, kind of dive in.
We'll try to make the distinction between what we would do and what we think these teams yes, actually will do.
Absolutely.
And that's especially crucial with the number one overall pick,
yeah.
which Phoenix has. I think both of us... I mean, what are the chances right now that Phoenix keeps the pick and drafts DeAndre Ayton?
I think 90%.
I think it's at least 90 as well. I'm sure, you know, they have to do their due diligence and shop around. I would not be surprised at all because I just still think it's so weird that Igor Kokoschkov used to coach Doncic. So I would not be surprised at all if they tried to make some kind of secondary trade to keep one and also get four or something yeah. if you start to see Luka fall. And personally, I would probably take Luka Doncic number one. Just kind of yes. what I was implying with the what we think they'll do versus what we would do.
And I think we should not dismiss the possibility that that's still in the cards and that everything we've heard from Ayton since the lottery has been a big smokescreen, hoping someone trades up and they think they can grab Luka at 3 or 4 or 2 or whatever it is.
It does seem like they could.
Which it does seem like they could. So like we shouldn't rule that out. That's why I say it's only 90. Because if you just went by what the reports are, you'd have to say it's like 95. It's like a 5% chance Marvin Bagley gets taken because he had a good workout with them. But like yep. it really seems like they're lasered in on Ayton. But that could be a smokescreen.
Yeah, and the reason why we like Doncic so much is because, so you look at where the NBA is at right now, and it's all about teams that just want to spread the floor, put a lot of shooters all over, and force you to guard and be spread out. And Luka, like, you know, the biggest criticism of him is his athleticism, but his mental game is already totally there, and he's able to make these passes, tough passes off the dribble. He can shoot off the dribble oftentimes. I mean, if you look at his shots, from this season, look at his highlights. He very rarely was taking open looks. And his shot already looks so good for an 18, 19-year-old. That's the thing. His distribution is there. He's never going to be a good defender. It's not really what you're drafting him for. But when you look at the guys...
I think his defense is going to be... It's overrated how bad it's going to be. He's 6'8". It's like the classic Kyle Korver thing, where Korver has just never been as bad on defense as people act like he is because he's 6'8". When you're that tall and you at least have some mobility, you can really make an impact on that end. At least, you know, your arms are longer. You have a few deflections, all that. You have to, like, take up more space. So I think that at least he's not... going to be Trae Young on defense, and I still like Trae Young a lot, but right. I worry a lot Trae about Young him defensively.
Really not going to guard. That's true. And it's also like how many guards in the league play good defense? It's definitely
not many.
A small group, most of whom don't give you that much offensive value.
Yeah, and I think the question is, you know, what we saw in the playoffs this year is that people hunt out the mismatch now, and the idea is just you get James Harden on the worst defender on the court, you get LeBron the worst defender on the court, you get Steph on the worst defender on the court, and so the key is your defense is only as good as the worst guy out there, which is why people are really focusing on defense this draft, I feel
like. On the other hand, I mean, Luka Doncic is going to be drafted by one of the worst teams in the league, right? Yep. So if he gets you to the point where you're actually in the playoffs,
that's a really good step.
That's a problem you want to have.
I also think...
What position do you think Luka is, ultimately? Like, if you were... Say you are Sacramento, right? Which is definitely a potential landing spot for him. And I know that you're not particularly high on De'Aaron Fox, but as Sacramento, they are. Would you be at all worried about drafting Luka? Or do you think those two can play together? Or do you think... I mean, look, you have to suspend your disbelief and pretend like you like De'Aaron Fox
right.
for the sake
so
of
So I... If I like De'Aaron Fox, I clearly project his jumper to be coming along well. And yep. that, like, we saw progress to, like, this yep. first season. And
freeze.
He's going to be shooting, like, he's going to be, in his career, a 37% shooter or so. Yeah, I can talk myself into the fit just because the idea is I think Doncic is, like, a 1-3 combo almost, or, like, a 1-4 combo even possibly, where he's going to mm-hmm. need the ball in his hand some, but he's not quite good enough to always take the ball up, I think. I think that's a little too much, asking too much from him. So you want a secondary ball handler, or maybe Doncic is the secondary ball handler. I also really, I've come around over the past few days to thinking a lot about Doncic as a role man. I think he could be really devastating in that role because it mitigates so many of the athleticism concerns. He's big enough to really set good screens. And then if you can get him coming around like the corner with a head of steam on a 4-on-3,
I mean, it's game over. You know, you've really won the possession at that point. Oh, yeah. So I really like him as a role man. So
you think about, you know, this obviously for a number of reasons doesn't make sense as a comparison, but Doncic is like almost the same size as Draymond Green.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's like a legit 6'8", 220, and he's only 18 years old. You can expect him to put on weight. Like, he plays the four sometimes for Real Madrid. I've seen a lot of analysis that pretty much dismisses the possibility of him being able to play the front court in the NBA. I wouldn't totally rule it out, especially on the right team.
He's 6'8", and already 230. He's going to get on an NBA weight program. He's going to put on a ton of muscle. And that guy is big enough in the NBA that's coming in the next couple of years to play the four. Absolutely, whatever you
certainly
want him
to. Certainly in small ball. In small ball, and yep. Stuff. And that's part of why he's got so
much
potential.
And the game situations, he can play the four, probably, which is what matters.
Yep. He could almost project as like a modern, better passing Haydo Turkoglu.
Yeah.
He's a couple inches shorter, but there's...
People throw that covered, like that comparison around as like a negative. I don't think people realize how good Haydo Turkoglu would be in today's NBA.
And even, I mean, that Orlando Magic team, he was such a big part, and that was such an ahead-of-their-time team.
Haydo Turkoglu was the second-best player on a team that went to the finals and feasibly could have won the finals. That series that only went five games was like a closer series than people act like.
Apologies to Richard Lewis.
Yeah, well, I still think Haydo was the second-best guy.
Both guys.
I mean, they were probably 2A and 2B, you know. But
yeah. So anyways, there are some red flags, but I think both of us have Doncic number one.
Should we give the little pitch about the concerning parts about Doncic is that he's just not quick enough. He's not going to be able to create space. He ultimately, like, if you play him as a primary ball handler, he's just going to get smothered and not be able to, like, create advantages.
Well, he's going to need a screen, basically.
Yes.
I think he projects to be really good as the ball handler in pick and roll, and there's going to be a lot of pick and rolls run for him. Pretty much.
Yeah, but can he beat switches is the question. I mean, there's the real concern. What if he just can't beat switches because he's not quick enough? You switch every pick and roll with Doncic.
Definitely, he's done some mean things to Euro bigs, which, you know, they're not the same as NBA bigs. We know that. Just in general, I mean, Luka and his career in a lot of ways and for a lot of people will serve as a reflection of where European basketball is at.
Yeah.
Which is probably not fair.
No.
Because, you know, there's...
But at the same time, it's probably the most fair prospect for possibly be held, that comparison held
because
to.
Because he's been dominant.
He's been dominant.
He's the best
18-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. Best 18-year-old European prospect we can remember. I mean, how would you compare Doncic to Rubio as a prospect? Not Rubio, who we've seen now, but the sort of 18-year-old Olympics 2008 Ricky Rubio. In terms of hype, in terms of expectations.
Pretty close. I think it's like that is pretty close. People forget how hyped Rubio was. Like the fact that Rubio went fifth was him falling in the draft.
And people weren't convinced he was going to come up, which he didn't.
Right. He didn't come up. That's one of the reasons he dropped is because for 2 years that he had to wait for him. But man, he was so hyped as a prospect. And in many ways, look, we always say that this Rubio we got in the NBA isn't the best version of Rubio because he tore his ACL at the end of his rookie year and he was never quite the same as people who watched a lot of Timberwolves during those years.
Oh, that first year was so fun. I'll never forgive Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, well, for a lot of things. But, yeah, Doncic is slightly higher hype, though, definitely. Because, I mean, Rubio, Doncic hasn't had an Olympics stage where Rubio really elevated himself and played like that, which really got the hype rolling for casual people. But for people who really know European basketball, Doncic is clearly way more
hyped. In terms of, like, Rubio was coming off the bench.
Yeah, it was, like, a part of the team, a role player, but wasn't a star.
I remember watching him play because he had been drafted by the Timberwolves. He spent a lot of time standing in the corner when he was playing over there. And Doncic has the ball in his hand all game.
Doncic is dominant. It's really impressive.
And his skills, I mean, Doncic has got to be the most skilled player.
And Doncic's step back, here's what it reminds me very much of James Harden's step back in the way that he's so good at creating space with that. And that's just going to be, it's going to probably be a 33% shot in the league, you know, if you just think about the difficulty of that shot that
but
you project to shoot.
The fact that he can just create that for you at the end of the shot clock.
So much value.
Something he can improve on. It's also, like, on the rare occasion that he does get a wide open three, I see him shoot him extremely confidently. He shoots from well behind the line, which is encouraging because the NBA line is marginally further than the line he's playing on
he
right now.
He rebounds well, which is important for grabbing a rebound and getting going in transition. You know, Russell Westbrook, when he grabs a rebound, the OKC offense is way more efficient, and, like, those things matter. And so just, like, getting the guys who can be your primary ball handler on the break, get hitting the boards, is an underrated skill. It's one of the most valuable things about Russell Westbrook's triple-double pursuit was that, as much as other things Russell Westbrook did in this triple-double pursuit were damaging to the Thunder.
Yeah.
But that was one of the valuables that he was, you know, values he was creating. But yeah, so we both love Doncic. We get the concerns about the athleticism, but we just think his skill level is going to overcome any athleticism lacking.
It'll be fascinating, too. I mean, we talked about some of the landing spots. All three of the top three picks in this draft are teams that are on our list.
Yeah.
teams that we've been following. Phoenix is one, Sacramento two, Atlanta three. If he falls past that, you know, there's been rumors about Memphis looking to trade number four. I mean, if he falls past three, there's really no guessing
where Doncic might end up. My favorite scenario is he falls to four, and as part of the four and Parsons trade, he ends up in a way better situation, be it Phoenix, be it any number of teams who are actually in the playoffs this year trading for him, be it in a San Antonio deciding that because they're trading Kawhi, they can take on Parsons' contract and give up 18 or whatever. So it's Parsons and four for 18.
It's also, we should talk about that Sacramento looking to trade the two to San Antonio.
Yeah.
It's been rumored. And knowing what we know about the Spurs, it seems a lot more likely that they take Luka Doncic than, you know, like a Bagley or a Jackson.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
But, you know, there are other guys in this draft, so let's keep talking about them. The consensus number one is DeAndre Ayton. On most boards, I have him at number three.
I have him at number two, which is partially just like I'm a little too scared to have him lower because he's so big and everyone else seems so set on him. And I always say, you know,
consensus is valuable in and of itself because there's so much randomness in the draft. And, you know, we're only one person. We're not delusional enough to think that we're smarter than everyone.
And if you look at ultimately like the way the draft value breaks out from each pick, if you just look historically, so this is in essence what consensus has arrived to with teams and everything, how the draft falls. Like it's pretty, you know, indicative of the actual change in talent and everything. You know, the fourth pick is more valuable than the sixth pick, and there's a reason for, like, teams get these picks right mostly, so I think consensus has a lot of value, and I don't like being like, I am 10 spots lower on this guy than everyone else, because I just think maybe I'm going to end up being right, but that's not the smart logic, yeah.
So the thing about Ayton, interestingly, is if it were 10, 15, 20 years ago, it would just be so easy.
He'd be the number one pick. He'd be the easiest number one pick. Like, in years we've had from prospects.
His physical profile is insane. And, you know, center for a long time was the most valuable.
You build your team, your center
position in the league. He, you know, a lot of his offensive game is predicated on post-ups. So my concern, and the reason why I don't have him at number one, is because of how the league is changing. I just wouldn't really want a offensively-minded center who demands post-up looks, who isn't a good screener, which he's not right now, who doesn't have good court awareness. He definitely is not a very NBA-ready prospect, I would say. But the upside is there just because, like, that size is insane. And even on the NBA, I mean, in college, he looked like a monster compared to those college centers.
He's still going to look huge.
He's still going to look huge in the NBA. And so if he gets in the right program and he's in the right situation, he could definitely become a superstar. I'm a little worried. I don't really like the mechanics and form on his jump shot. It did go in at a decent clip this year, and if he can shoot NBA threes, that's a huge deal. I don't think he'll be able to right away, although, you know, he will probably take some. He's going to be on a bad team. He's a high pick. You know, you let him do his thing.
Yep.
But, yeah, personally, I have Ayton number three because the guy who I think is a more modern player and just it's easier to project a role for him is Jaren Jackson Jr. Jackson's an interesting case because he, you know, I watched a lot of college basketball this season. Which not everybody who follows the draft does, but I try to, mostly for the draft. It's not like I love college basketball by any means, but I try to get a look at all the guys in actual game action, so I'm not just watching the highlights. Jaren Jackson was not a particularly pivotal player for Michigan State this year. They had a really good team, and it was kind of like when things were going on all cylinders and everyone was playing well, Jackson was this extra guy who, like, unlocked this other ceiling for their team. I mean, he was really solid for them this year.
He was a role player.
He wasn't their go-to guy. He was a role player, a really good role player, which is also what I think he probably will be in the NBA. There is a chance that, you know, he has this untapped potential that he unlocks and becomes a star. But it's just his ability to set screens, his physical profile, to run to the rim, to shoot
threes.
He
doesn't run to the rim, really. That's one of my concerning things watching film is he loves to pop. A lot of these big guys love to pop and don't like to run to the rim, and that's concerning.
But do you think that because he doesn't have a post-up game, like if he's going to succeed in the NBA,
he has to run to the rim? Well, right, that's my thing. I'm just concerned that you have to.
In terms of how he plays right now, that's fair.
I do want to go back.
Jackson seems like the best defensive. I mean, Bamba, I guess, has that physical profile again. He's just a physical.
What if Bamba is the best regular season defender, and Jackson is the best postseason defender? How do you feel about that statement?
I could believe that. That seems reasonable to me.
I want to go back to something about you were talking about Ayton, then we'll dive back into Jackson because he's interesting.
Yeah, we can talk about them both together. I mean, I have a bunch of centers pumped here, so but I have Jackson 2 and Ayton 3.
So, Ayton, we both know right now he can't set screens at all, and that's concerning. Yeah. But
like, cannot at all. Like, cannot, his footwork is really bad.
But let's say they fix that. That is something that coaching
should fix. Definitely something you can learn. It should be able to learn in a summer.
So let's say he learns and figures out how to screen, and we've watched the NBA become more and more switching based. And the way you actually beat switching, one of the best ways is you attack the mismatch created in the switch in the post. And Devin Booker is on the Suns. So let's imagine Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton are running pick and roll. And because Devin Booker is such a knockdown shooter, you can't go under the screen at all. You have to either go over it, fight over it, which creates a mismatch of DeAndre Ayton rolling down the lane, or you switch it. In which case, then DeAndre Ayton has whoever was guarding Devin Booker on him, and then he takes that guy to the post, and suddenly you can clear out. You can have four shooters on DeAndre Ayton posting up a two guard.
What you really want is the other team having to send.
Let's put them. They send help.
It's not
DeAndre
the post-up look necessarily. It's the pass out.
And he's a good passer out of the post.
Josh Jackson to an open Dragan Bender.
An open Devin Booker. You know,
an
and
open
like
Devin Booker.
With a second pass.
You're rotating.
He throws the pass to Jackson, then Booker's guy goes over to help Jackson. It's one more pass to Booker and he's through. And Aiden's a good passer out of the post. An underrated part of his game is that for as big of a physical freak as he is, he's also got he's a pretty good passer. You know, I was really impressed with some of the ways he was able to like hit the opposite corner out of the post at Arizona and everything. Yeah. And so look, that is the pitch. That is what they're thinking in the Suns' decision making room right now, where they're like, we have to get this guy. There's so much upside. Like, I understand it, it makes sense. I just once again, we lean Luka, but I can see it all with Ayton. I just don't know if it's actually all going to come together.
And look, it's really close for me between Jackson and Ayton too. Like maybe on some level, I'm just being a contrarian with that one, but I do think that Jackson is like he's one of the least ready guys in the draft. He's very raw, and so you got to know that picking him. But I definitely think the potential is there.
What do you think? What are your thoughts on this statement? The Suns need to be bad next year to get one more pick anyways, as much as everyone in Phoenix wants to accelerate the timeline. And so they should be targeting Jackson solely for the impact that he wouldn't have on their win total next year.
I do worry about, like, it seems like the single biggest indicator. We talk a lot about how the draft is a crapshoot.
Yes.
And I definitely think that's true. And we should clarify that, say that on the pod. But one of the biggest indicators of success is situation.
Right.
And so I do worry that, I mean, if you look at a guy like Marquese Chriss, right? Is Marquese Chriss really that bad? Oh, you know, a lot of people liked him as a prospect. He was considered a steal at 8.
Yep.
Is he really that bad? Or is it just that he's an example of a guy who's been very raw, he's been on a team with a bunch of other young guys. He doesn't get that much selective attention. He doesn't get that many chances to fail before it becomes, oh, look at Marquese. I mean, I guess he has played a lot for Phoenix, and so in that sense, he's got.
I would almost argue that he's gotten too many chances to fail in a weird way.
And without, like, accountability that comes with being on a good team.
Yeah, so I think that's with fair. Raw guys, really, really raw guys, you want them to be in a place where there's some accountability and they have to make good decisions and everything when they play, versus a guy who's a little more polished, just needs a lot of reps and everything, and he's young and he's just coming along. Yeah. I like them in young places where they're just going to shoot a lot and everything, but really raw guys who just like they're promised basketball IQ, they're making dumb decisions and everything. I like when they get to a pretty rigid place where they're like a bunch of veterans around, because then they have to really improve on the things that they need to improve on to get on the court. The physical skills, their ability to do things on the court, they still have. They just need to learn how to make good decisions.
So I worry a little bit that Jackson could just get lost in Phoenix.
Yes.
And if he were to go somewhere like, you know, Memphis, he's probably not going to fall to Memphis. I think that Jackson's not getting past Atlanta. I think Atlanta's another good
What if it goes 8-1, Bagley 2? You think Jackson's not getting past Atlanta and they're definitely taking Jackson instead of Doncic?
I think Atlanta's taking Jackson over Doncic. I really
Interesting.
Do. But I'm hoping that Sacramento will take Doncic. I'm not high on Marvin Bagley. But anyway, he's not in my top 5. I have Jackson 2, 8-3, and then number 4 I have Mo Bamba, and number 5 I have Wendell Carter.
Okay.
I think is another interesting juxtaposition because those guys could not be more different as
completely
prospects.
Completely opposite.
And Bamba, that's why I have him slightly higher, is because, I mean, just the physical tools are so insane. Nobody could really blame you. Look, this sort of like Drew Hanlon stuff, I mean, we've been burned by it before, but it is encouraging that his jumper looks
really good.
It looks
really,
really
good.
Not just good, but like he probably has the best form out of the big men in this range.
Yep.
But the thing about Bamba is I watched him play at Texas this year, and he definitely was not a major difference maker for them.
Here's,
he just wasn't that great on the court.
I would watch Bamba play, and I just always had this nagging feeling in the back of my head. I'd be like, oh, look at that wingspan, those tools. He's so long. He's so big. And I would have this nagging feeling in the back of my head every time. I was like, kind of sucks. Like, he's just actually not that good.
Right. And, like, to be fair,
are we
college
sure he's
guards,
good?
You know, college guards, they're not very good. He wasn't like a focal point of his team necessarily. On defense, though, it's a little concerning because it did seem like he didn't use his physical tools that well. And defensive instincts are so important to being a good defender in the league.
Which is something Aiden doesn't have either. We should have mentioned Aiden's defensive instincts are really concerning. Yep. He can't defend the rim at all. He does okay guarding out in space, which is encouraging. But, I mean, we'll see. That's a big red flag.
Aiden's a guy where, like, Aiden gets switched on to James Harden.
That's going to be a problem.
Yeah, you're nervous.
Yep. But continue with Bamba.
Yeah, well, I have Bamba at number four. And I think that, look, if he gets it, even like, you know, things start to come together for him, it's easy to see him as the best or maybe the second best player in this draft. He also could be a huge bust. Definitely boomer bust potential. We've heard him potentially linked in that sort of like 4 through 6 range. If he does fall to Orlando at 6, I love that as a fit.
Yeah, that's like we're going to have the best defense in the league, possibly.
Exactly. Orlando is just like, let's just get a bunch of toolsy, long-armed front court guys. At that point, they'll really need a guard.
Yep.
But I mean, the idea of Gordon, Isaac, Bamba, that sounds like a nightmare for opposing offenses.
And look, maybe they won't ever real score, and maybe in 5 years, we'll be like, it was so dumb with the Magic to try to go all in on like defense and length and everything. But look, it's a zig when everyone else is zagging or whatever. You know, you're mixing it up, and you are... There's a way to see it working where suddenly teams just can't score more than like 95 points on you because you're so long and you have, it's so hard for them to create advantages on you guys and you have such good rim protection and length and like, you know, it's just, you see it.
And the comparison everyone loves for Bamba is Gobert.
Right.
Which, I mean, really only makes sense physically right now. He doesn't have that Gobert defensive and things.
No,
but also, look, like anybody who says they knew how good Gobert was going to be is probably lying to you.
Yep.
And then I have Wendell Carter, who does not have the physical tools of a Mo Bamba by any means, but is like probably the most polished player in this draft. Have everybody in this sort of like top 8, top 10 scenario, I would probably be the most surprised if Carter was just a huge bust. He sets good screens. He's in the right place a lot. He was a good heady defender this year. In general, like, you know, I watched a lot of Duke for their other guys. For Bagley,
for Allen, for Trent,
and you just end up being like, wow, Wendell Carter is really good. He makes the right play a lot. And so it's weird because, like, you know, what outside of Cleveland at 8 and Philly at 10, like, what teams in the lottery are really looking for a guy who might be like a super role player? You know, you want your next cornerstone, and I'm not totally sure if Wendell Carter is that. But I have him at 5, partially because I think he has such a high floor as a prospect.
Yeah. So for me, so I had, as I said, I had Doncic at 1, Aiden at 2. Number 3 for me is Wendell Carter Jr. 4, I have Trae Young. And 5, I have Jaren Jackson. So for me with Wendell Carter is I actually see upside there. I think when you're that smart of a basketball player and you do the right thing, that can overcome some lack of physical tools. Look, I think he's like, when I would watch Bagley film, I would always just have my eyes taken off of Bagley by Wendell Carter because he would be on like the opposite block, sealing his man for position to get the offense rebound or whatever. He would be setting a screen that was just like the right basketball player on defense. Yeah. He would be shifting.
Carter, there's just not holes in his game. He shot 75% on free throws this year.
And he shot 40% from the three-point line. Like, he can shoot. He can get in the post. He makes good post moves. He can play defense. He can rebound. It's just like he has everything you want. And look, the comparison that I was making like back during the college season has kind of become super hot now with his playoff performances, Al Horford to Wendell Carter Jr. And I just like
forgetting Al Horford, that is a top three
pick. That's a top three pick.
Interesting that Atlanta's right there at number 3.
Oh, that'd be really fun. But I want to make a point about this draft. I think 3 through 8 are so bunched together and so close that I would not use the number 3 pick. If I had the number 3 pick, I would trade it down to like 6 or 7. And even if I didn't get like a great return, I would make the trade.
We love trading down.
Yes, always trade down.
You know, if any of our teams trade down, we'll probably be in favor of it because you're turning one thing into multiple things. And the team that's trading up is just inherently overpaying because they think they have seen a market inefficiency.
Which is just silly because there's no statistical evidence of teams having like market inefficiency within the draft. So then 4, Trae Young, who you haven't talked about at all. You have him 6, I remember.
I have him 6, yeah. So that's logically where we're at on my board, too, is we're just getting to Trae Young. My thing with Trae Young is it's weird that he's in 6 because I think he's likely to either be a top 3 player in this draft or not even in the top 10.
Yes.
And it really just comes down to how well does his shooting translate. I don't think he does much of anything well besides shoot. I think his playmaking is very overrated, to be honest. I hated watching him play this year. And some of that was because his team was bad. Basically, the more of a Trae Young apologist somebody is, the more they'll tell you how bad Oklahoma was this year.
Oklahoma was terrible this year.
There you go. President Trae Young apologist. But, I mean, you know, some of that, it's like if somebody who doesn't like Trae Young, or somebody who does like Trae Young but doesn't like a different point guard. If you don't like a shoot-first point guard, and you know, then you'll be like, his teammates, they played bad because they didn't have their rhythm. Like, they knew they weren't going to get the ball. All the stuff people say about Westbrook, right?
Yep.
But if you like him, then you're like, those guys suck. Like, Trae had to shoot every time. Anyway, I found it a very unpleasing style of basketball to watch. But I do understand where the league is going in terms of shooting. I will give him another chance when he is playing with NBA talent. Hopefully he shows better. I mean, Trae Young would take, like, one terrible shot per half. And some of the worst shots, like air balls and stuff.
Yeah, he would just take terrible shots.
You'd have like one highlight pass per game to an open guy, and people would say, what a great playmaker.
I think you're underselling his playmaking because he did make good passes. He was selfish and unselfish at the same time. You know, it's almost like if you mesh together like Kobe Bryant's wanting to shoot and LeBron James wanting to pass, because Trae Young did want to make passes because I think he cared about
getting assists.
I didn't think that mattered and everything. Look, that's not perfect, but for me, where I really like Trae Young is as a secondary playmaker. Like, my favorite fit for him, where I just think it's like game over if he goes there, is if he goes to the Sixers and he can play with Ben Simmons. And like, the idea could be like, Trae Young could be running off screens to start the possession, and if they can't get him open, they could run like a dribble handoff with him and Ben Simmons.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to Philly.
You don't think that he's being projected at like 8 or 9? He could totally fall to 10.
Think he's falling to 10?
I think he could fall to 10. I think he's a candidate to fall in the draft. Or there's reports that Philly wants to trade up, and he's a candidate to be like the guy they're targeting to trade up for.
There's another guy, the guy who I have at 7, actually, who I really want to go to Philly. But I think that Trae Young, I kind of agree with what you're saying in general, which is that he needs to play with other good players. One of the encouraging things about him this year is when he did, the rare occasion he did have open threes, he shot a really good percentage on them. Yeah. He knocked down his open looks. I mean, he's going to be absolutely exploited on defense for his entire career, which is why he has to be such a good shooter in order to make this work.
I mean, the only
he's also not as small as we thought.
He's taller than we think.
He looked tiny in college this year.
He needs to bulk up. The guys who are his height, the only way it works in the NBA is if they get really strong. He needs to really bulk up. He needs to look like a Jameer Nelson type body. And I don't know if
he's not getting there this summer, I'll tell you.
No, definitely not.
But even you look at how Tyus Jones has progressed. Tyus Jones, first year on the Timberwolves, he was so bad on defense. Yeah. And now he can at least hold his own. And
because part of it is
because he's a lot stronger.
Yep. And so I think that's why Trae Young, though it's going to be bad on defense, I don't think it's possible that it could be okay. I do think one of the problems with Trae Young is he just didn't give a shit on defense this year. And look, that can be a red flag.
That is a problem.
Or it could be just Ben Simmons at LSU. And some of these guys just don't give a shit about college because they know they're getting fucked and they have to, like, you know, play for free. And they're just getting, like, you know, they're just millions are made off of them.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Simmons was immediately a good defender once he got to the NBA.
Yeah, he was go. Someone wants to pay me now, like, I'll play.
On college basketball. The guy who I have at 7, who I want the Sixers to draft, and who I think I'm slightly higher on than most people in general, is Mikal Bridges from Villanova. Mikal Bridges, kind of the book on him, if you listen to the consensus draft takes, is he's the consummate role player. We know exactly what he is. He's just a 3-and-D guy. And I think part of this comes from the fact that he is the only old guy in the top 10 or in the top 12 or whatever. He's easily the highest-ranked non-freshman in this draft. So people naturally are like, well, he is what he is. And to me, the natural comparison that I haven't heard but that makes a ton of sense to me for Mikal is Paul George, who is like the elite 3-and-D guy. When you think about what Paul George does, especially in his ideal situation, he's like a really, really good 3-and-D guy who can also kind of create off the dribble. And that's
what more attack closeouts, because as someone who watched Paul George play a lot,
good secondary guy.
Best attacking closeout.
And so I think Bridges, what it comes down to, too, is I mean, he jumped off the screen this year for Villanova when you watched him play, not always in a good way, but he just kind of looked like a bull in a china shop out there sometimes, like playing against college athletes. There's just not those 6'9", 6'10", super athletic wings in college. Like, they don't exist.
Right.
Those guys play center in college. So, you know, the guys guarding him were usually like 6'4". Sometimes he tried to do a little too much, or I think also when you're watching a guy like that playing college, it's like, why is he shooting so many threes? the guy guarding him 6 inches shorter than him. But it definitely translates well to the NBA.
And what I like about his jumper a lot is he's tall, as you talked about, but he shoots the ball from so high above his head, yep. It's going to be almost impossible to block. It reminds me a little of Robert Covington's shot. And he actually, as a player, reminds me a lot of Robert Covington more than Paul George, slightly because I'm a little lower on him. But because Robert Covington shoots the ball from so high above his head and shoots it with a high arc, and Mikal Bridges shoots it so high up there, it's so hard to block that shot, and he can get it off when it's so contested. So the idea of him playing in Philly is great, because if you can actually just like put Embiid and Simmons next to two guys like Robert Covington, like where they can defend, you know, cause problems for people on the other end, and then they can just shoot almost any time because they just have such height and they shoot the ball from so high up. Like, there's a lot of value in that. I get that. I don't quite see the like superstar or really all, I guess you really talk about it more, it's like all-star upside, because I just don't think there's quite enough creation off the dribble. But that is something that improves with guys coming to the NBA. You know, he maybe starts out as a comfortable 3-and-D guy, and by year three, he's we're like, wow, it's crazy how well he's gotten at like attacking the closeout, and he's developed that like secondary, you know, attack where suddenly he's like finishing. And then, you know, year four, it's like, wow, he's not only getting to the rim, but he's now passing it out to teammates and causing, creating for others and everything. And suddenly, like, that's how you can piece together him becoming an all-star. Like, I see it. It's possible. I don't think it's likely, but I do think it's possible. I agree with that.
Yep. Like I said, I'm higher on him than most. It will depend a little bit on where he goes, but you know, if he goes to a good team, if he falls to Philly, if someone trades up, I'll be very excited about Mikal from right away. I could even see him as like a sleeper rookie of the year candidate, because there's not the sort of like breakout guy, or there's not a Ben Simmons in this draft.
Yep. I will... Let me catch up to you to get to my... So my number six is Mo Bamba, for a lot of the reasons you talked about. I mean, look,
Orlando.
Yeah, he's so tall.
We will be happy on draft night.
We would be really happy.
Is he even going to be there? We'll see.
Yeah, if he's even here. I like his
sort
fit.
Of question is Memphis at four.
Well, I also like Bamba's fit in Dallas at five. There's a lot of rumors now that they don't like him as much, but I really do like that fit because I think he covers up for a lot of the problems of Dennis Smith, and they could be an explosive pick and roll combination.
Well, it's also like the other guy who we like in that range is Trae Young, and you don't take Trae Young if you
exactly
have Dennis Smith.
Exactly. And I almost like the fit of Bamba with Dallas and Trae Young with Orlando better, just because I think it helps both teams more. Yes. But anyways, then number seven for me is Marvin Bagley, who I'm higher than Marvin Bagley on you, but I'm still much lower than consensus.
Right. I mean, we've seen Bagley mocked as high as two.
That seems like it's gaining a lot of momentum.
Just people thinking the Kings are kind of silly? I mean, also though, a lot of the draft analysts really like Bagley.
Yeah.
And it's like, I watched him play so much, and it's so much of a post-up game. It's so much of a sort of like ground-bound, old-school style. Like, I'm just going to beat you one-on-one and get to the block and do my little hook shot or my fadeaway or whatever.
There is a pull-up jumper.
There is a pull-up jumper, which better extend to three or else it's not really that
helpful. He took some pull-up threes at Duke, so if you extend that to the NBA line, it's possible.
But if he's on a bad or poorly coached team, too, that doesn't dissuade him from taking mid-range, he's going to take a ton of mid-range. If he goes to Sacramento...
It could get ugly fast with Marvin Bagley. I agree with this.
He's not going to guard anyone. It's hard to ever project him guarding anyone. I'm really concerned about position for Bagley.
So I think he's a four, and we've had this talk before. So my stance on Bagley, the reason I have him at seven and not lower.
I haven't met nine, by the way. And even that is like, look, I wouldn't be drafting him.
Yeah, you don't
love
him.
If he falls that low, then at that point it just becomes a value pick. Yeah.
The reason I like him a little more, though less than these other guys, is I think if you look at this draft, one of the key things about this draft is a bunch of fives who can feasibly maybe protect the rim someday and shoot threes. And I think that archetype is going to become more and more common. I mean, that used to be like literally like the golden goose.
The unicorn.
Yeah,
right?
Like it just didn't exist. And now
Bagley pretty much needs to play next to a unicorn in order to maximize his skill set.
And I think
he can't protect the rim by himself.
Nope. And so he needs to be a four. But you need spacing too, because he needs to be able to do work in the post and he needs to be able to attack and have like a spaced out court. Yep. But I think those guys are becoming more and more common. So in 3 years' time, I think it's going to be way easier for players to fit next to Marvin Bagley, and there'd be enough fives in the league to fit next to Marvin Bagley as he plays the four for really amplify his skill set. So like we both talked about how we love Marvin Bagley going to the Knicks. We think that's a perfect fit.
Part of the reason I have him at nine is that's where the Knicks are picking, and I think that Bagley and Porzingis, if there's going to be a Bagley fit, that one makes a lot of sense.
But I just think there's going to be more of those situations moving forward, which is why I feel like I'm projecting for a future NBA that I think is heading and how Marvin Bagley fits into that. I think he fits in really poorly into today, like 2018's NBA, but I think 2021's NBA could look a lot more positive for Marvin Bagley.
What it comes down to for me is if I were running an NBA team, my team would very, very seldom post up. And so when I look at these guys who play a lot of post-up ball in college, I want to take that away and see what else they can do. And with Bagley, I'm concerned that the answer to that, at least right now, is not very much.
Yep.
Right. Again, like Ayton, he's another guy where if it were 10, 15 years ago, I mean, it would be Ayton 1, Bagley 2, and the draft would start at 3.
Yeah. We should also mention Marvin Bagley signed a huge deal with Puma, projected to be the biggest chewy contract deal for a rookie since Kevin Durant.
Which, I mean, good for him. He's not going to have a Kevin Durant-type impact, I don't think. But, you know, I'm never one to have my hands in other people's wallet. You know, I'm happy to see him getting paid.
But I want to make the point. Look, there's no reason for us to think that Puma is any better at like evaluating who's going to be a good NBA player than others. But it is another data point of people going in there, doing research on him, identifying him as a really good candidate to like make that investment in.
People also really like him as a person.
I like him as a person and everything. So I can just like, you know, as I always say with draft prospects, there's high variance with everyone. There's ways you can see all these guys busting. I think maybe at the end we should go through and walk through exactly how we can see each guy busting really badly.
Yeah. Well, we only have so much time. I mean, we have kind of talked about that in some of these analyses where it's like, you know, if Mo Bamba doesn't develop his defensive instincts better, if Bagley doesn't continue to add a more defense, diverse offensive game. With Trae Young, it's more like, is his shooting legit? Is he a 42%, 43% three-point shooter?
But with Bagley, I think I see how it can work. I guess it's kind of the point I was trying to get to. It's like, and we don't want to undersell how it can work for each of these guys. So moving on, number 8 on my board is Michael Porter Jr., who, if he was healthy, thinking on it, like if his back was healthy,
he'd be number one.
Yeah, top three.
I mean, at he'd least be in two, there. 3 years ago, he was definitely the consensus number one from this draft. It was really fun to watch what he was doing as a teenager.
Just because like Team USA things and everything, the Nike Hoop Summit, all that stuff.
He seemed like a transcendent player. I mean, a 6'10", 6'11", wing with great perimeter game and a knockdown shot.
Yeah.
That's a perennial all-star for sure. I actually dropped him out of my top 10, unfortunately, which I really like what I think he can be. I'm absolutely rooting for him. Just like the injury concerns are real. We've heard he hasn't been healthy in years. And it's a back injury, which, you know, that's not one of those things you can just rest and get better.
Not good.
Not good. So, that one just comes down to health. I mean, you know, absolutely rooting for the guy. I hate to ever see a young player's career derailed by health, but personally, I don't think it's a risk reward that I would be super comfortable with right now.
Yeah.
Again, until if I'm Charlotte at 11 and he's there, I'm running up to the podium.
Yeah.
Because some of these teams, I mean, if you're Charlotte, how else are you going to get a star? You
know, absolutely.
When you're in that 11 through 14 range, you need to take flyers on potential stars.
Yep. For me, the reason I still have him at 8 is I view this draft. And once again, like, I don't think in any way my opinion is 100% right. I view the draft as so much more fluid than a normal person does. I really view it as a crapshoot. These are my opinions more than anything
Luckily
else.
Luckily for us, we're not trying too hard to make it as drafts.
No, definitely not.
It's a silly, messed up game.
Yeah, really dumb. I mean, look, I think it helps some, but like those guys definitely have insights and everything, but it still comes down to like, I mean, there's a reason that companies like Goldman Sachs don't hire people out of high school and make them go to college, even though you don't learn anything in college at all to like really help you work at Goldman Sachs. It's because they want 4 extra years of just like insight into these people, because it's a lot easier to evaluate who someone's going to be at 22 and 23 than at 18 and 19. And it's really hard to evaluate who someone's going to turn out to be at 18, 19.
And you look at the guys like a Mikal Bridges, who is going to end up being a top 10 pick in this draft.
Yeah.
As a freshman, true freshman.
Was not good.
Lost.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was, So,
Michael Porter.
High upside.
The guy who I have.
From his health. And also, there is a world where it doesn't work just with who he is as a basketball player, because he takes bad shots. He never really gets into like the right rhythm, and he doesn't create enough for others. And there's a way where he just is like sort of a good stats, bad team guy, even if he's healthy, which is another caveat we should put out about him. It's not like if he's healthy, he's guaranteed to be a 5-time All-Star.
There are no sure things.
There are no sure things at all.
Yep. The guy who I have at number 8, I definitely see as a high ceiling, low floor guy. It's Kevin Knox from Kentucky. And I like him for a lot of the same reasons that people like a Michael Porter. You know, I think he's got an offensive upside where he could potentially be a number one guy. He's really young, which I like about Knox. I always like Kentucky guys because I think that that's sort of the closest you can come to being in the NBA while playing college basketball. I think he's already gotten really good training and coaching and has also played with other good players for a year, just in pickup and practice. I think that stuff is really important. So I do like Knox as kind of like a a just wing, a versatile wing. Ultimately, you want him at the four, especially in your crunch time lineups. He can slide to the three, though. I'll say similar things about Miles Bridges. I just think where the league is going, you can never have too many wings. That's why I'm high on Mikal Bridges. That's why I'm high on Knox. That's why I'm high on Miles Bridges, because I can see exactly what these guys should be, which is versatile, toolsy wings who ideally should be two-way. I mean, Knox, it's pretty hard to see him really getting there on defense. His defense is pretty rough this year. But the thing I liked about what he did on offense at Kentucky is you could see him, and again, this is because Kentucky, they play and develop their guys for the NBA, but he got a lot of different play types. You know, yep. He can go off the screen and flare. He can curl. He's got all these different pull-up moves, secondary stuff. I just think he has a pretty diverse offensive game. His efficiency numbers weren't great this year, which, I mean, that'll happen when you're carrying the load, and this Kentucky team offensively struggled compared to most Kentucky teams. So you'd like to see that be better, but from what I've actually seen by watching, I'm high on Knox, and I think the tools are there.
What do you view as his long-term position?
The four.
The four?
He's got to be a four.
That's makes him less valuable in my mind.
I think there's more fours.
I think there's so many fours. I actually think that a lot of these draft prospects were like, oh, he's going to be a four in the NBA. That's just code for he's too slow to play the three, and so he has to play him at the four.
How many pure threes even are there?
There aren't many. That's why they're the most valuable position.
A 2-3 or a 3-4. And so if you have the other team's three.
I mean, Trevor Ariza is a three, and he can play the four, but he's really a three.
Knocks against Trevor. But Trevor Ariza, I would say, is closer to the 2-3 end of that.
Okay.
Where he's kind of like.
That's the more valuable end. The 3-4 end is the not valuable end, and the 2-3 where you're playing the wing is where all the value is. And there's just frustrating part about this draft is there's none of those guys. There's no 2-3s in the top 10 who are the top guys.
I don't know. I think that I think that Knox is definitely going to be able to guard and switch at least passably, assuming that he tries on defense. I do think that he's got really good physical tools. I wouldn't worry too much about his ability to guard a Trevor Ariza type. And the guys who are really elite at that position, the LeBrons, the KDs, those are 3-4s. And again, but Knox, you're not really drafting him for his defense. It's more about the offense. And he's going to have to be able to knock down threes, especially open threes, in order to hit his potential. But in terms of a fit for him, where do I like him? I would... the earliest, I guess, and this is even a little too early, and it would have to be the other guys I like Carter and Mikal Bridges would have to be gone, but Cleveland at 8 starts to make sense for Kevin Knox.
You really I worry about Kevin Knox being, because that's a rebuild that's almost starting. People are talking about how the Cavs like Larry Nance Jr. and want to keep Rodney Hood around or whatever. All those young guys in the Cavs suck. The Cavs are bare carcass.
I mean, the book on this team was it was LeBron and a bunch of guys who were bad.
And so I worry about Knox being the only guy. I want him coming in. He's a piece I like when you already have a young guy or two and he can compliment them a little more because I just don't think he is the guy. Right. I think his...
Well, if he falls to the Clippers, they have those back-to-back picks at 12 and 13.
That's a really great
fit.
Makes
a lot of sense. I also wouldn't mind seeing the Clippers take Knox and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
And play the Kentucky guys. That's interesting.
Not that, that's really going to make or break either guy, but it's just kind of a fun storyline.
Yeah, I get that. I see that. I don't love Shai. I worry about the shot.
We can talk about him. He's on my list of sort of.
Yeah, but should we finish our top tens real quick?
Yeah,
so my
Shai is not in my top ten.
Yeah, so my nine and did you just do eight? That was your number eight.
Knox is eight,
and then
Bagley's
nine.
And
who's
ten? Is Miles Bridges.
Okay, so for me, 9 and 10 are Mikal Bridges and Miles Bridges, and I can't really determine the order because I kind of view them similar. I lean towards Mikal because I think he can play some 3 and 4. Well, I think Miles can almost only play the 4. I worry about him as a 3.
Mikal is definitely more of a perimeter player than Miles. I mean, Mikal was only on playing on the perimeter.
Right, he was playing the 3 at Villanova while Miles was playing the 3 at Michigan State, but that was a bad fit. You know, the problem is Michigan State was playing Jaren Jackson Jr. at the 4 and they were playing, Ward at the 5 and just
they were
bad.
Such a big team.
Yep.
And that's Big Ten basketball for you.
Oh yeah, Big Ten basketball, where excitement goes to die.
Yeah, Big Ten basketball. We hope you like rebounding.
I hope you like it when the ball hits the rim.
Right, you'll see a lot of that.
So Miles Bridges, my basic scouting report on him is he could be a 4 who could be a devastating role man who has a good secondary playmaker who could I would love to view. I could see him absolutely throwing that pass Blake Griffin used to always throw to DeAndre Jordan, where he'd be rolling down the lane, catch it, and in one motion, throw it up for a big guy, throw the dunk. And that's a play I see coming out of Miles Bridges. Looks like he can shoot some. It looks like his defense could be passable at the 4. I mean, I view him as a safe player for the most part. He's one of the guys
I think this is kind of a weird comparison because we're talking about a lottery pick and this guy wasn't a lottery pick. But a guy who Miles reminds me of, who's been really excellent in the playoffs these last couple years, is PJ Tucker.
Oh, I love that comparison. That's great.
I think, like, look, he's not a guy who you're like, he's not a guy who you're trying to run plays for him to get open threes, but if the other team leaves him open, he can knock it down. He's going to do a lot of little things. He's hard-nosed, and he'll play good defense. And that's what it's going to come down to with Miles. That really unlocks all of it for him, is if he's that hard-nosed, gritty, tough defensive player that we're known and expecting for, out of him because of his sort of Michigan State background.
Yep.
If he does that, I'd be more than happy seeing him at 10 again. But who, I mean, Cleveland's going to pick someone.
He doesn't fit well with the Sixers.
None of these guys, he doesn't fit great with the Sixers. Cleveland's going to pick someone. None of these guys are really, who are in that 8 range, are what we actually would want Cleveland to get, really, right? Except maybe Michael Porter. I mean, who are you comfortable with as a blank slate kind of guy?
I mean,
going to a blank slate. Because Miles Bridges, again, too, it seems like a guy who would be better off. I mean, you know, if he falls to Denver.
Oh, I love him. I love him on Denver. That's perfect. He could, like, replace Paul Millsap in a couple of years, you know, when Millsap, or after this season, really, because Millsap's probably going to have to leave unless he takes a discount. Yeah, Cleveland, I don't like anyone with the Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland's in such bad shape. Actually, what I would love Cleveland to do is to trade the pick for a future, like, just trade it, maybe trade down to, like, either trade 8 for 12 and 13 from the Clippers, or trade it for like a future first and something else or whatever, and really just be like, you know what, like, we're just going to be really bad for a long time, and that's part of like having LeBron and like going to 4 straight finals.
You don't have LeBron is you anymore. Just there's no really way to prepare for that.
You just really bottom out, and that's just like part of the deal. But you know what? It's totally worth it because you just went to 4 straight finals. You know, even if they're terrible for the next 5 years during this rebuild, because that's just what it takes to replenish their asset base and everything. Totally worth it because of the value you created during those 4 years of going to the championships and like winning a title. If you win a title for me,
the Cleveland won a championship, like their first one ever. Look, I'm a Timberwolves fan. We could be so bad for so long. We have been, but if we wanted to win a championship,
everything else is gravy for a long time.
Yep. So, who knows what Cleveland's gonna do?
But I mean, I like the idea of like, I mean, Michael Porter. If Michael Porter's on the board, I take him if I'm Cleveland because of that upside. And I probably don't play him the entire first year. And I get like the world's best back specialist in there, and then we do whatever it takes to like get to work on that.
Yeah, put him in a program.
Yep.
I hear that. So we're done with our top tens. It's probably worth it to talk about these guys in that kind of like teen range.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think we
know more about this. I know a lot about that. I know a fair amount of those
and
top 10.
You're still going to be fine in the teens. It's once we get to like the second round.
Where I'm just like, all right.
But like, look, we've talked off pod about Colin Sexton plenty. I really liked Sexton during the season this year. He was fun to watch. I don't totally get it. I mean, for a while he was being mocked in the top 10, which I wouldn't like that.
I mean,
he is still in some mocks.
I think there's a non-zero chance he goes 6th to the Magic. I think we should prepare ourselves for that happening.
That would be tough. That will be, and we're definitely going to do a pod, a post-draft pod.
Yep.
And that will be a somber one if Sexton goes to the Magic. I mean, look, I like him. He's exciting. He's a good athlete. He's definitely going to play good hard-nosed defense. He's not going to be able to shoot NBA threes. And if you can't shoot and you're a guard, I'm not trying to take you with a pick.
You can learn to shoot. Here's the thing. All these guys who we say
when
can't shoot,
that's very true.
Like, they can't. It's just you're not as likely to become a good shooter if you're not a good shooter
you're
right
starting
away.
Starting from a place of being not.
And the most important thing for guys who play on the perimeter in the NBA is shooting. So if you're a prospect who can't shoot, sure, you can work out, but it's such a red flag that you're just not going to be very interesting.
So how would you rank – I'll give you my answer in a sec, but how would you rank the three out of Sexton, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Zaire Smith?
Oh, okay. So it would go Sexton, Shai, Zaire. I really don't like Zaire Smith. I think he's a classic –
don't you think those guys are similar players, though, ultimately, where they're kind of like 1-2 combo guards, none of whom can really shoot right now?
I think Sexton and Shai are similar players. I think Zaire Smith –
He's just an athlete.
I think he just looks – his jump shot looks bad to me. Everything he does in the court looks robotic to me. He's just like – I like guys who look fluid because guys who look fluid are the guys who are just natural basketball players.
I do kind of like with Zaire is if he's still there for Phoenix at 16. I wouldn't mind.
Yeah,
like,
that's
there becomes
fine.
A spot when it's fine because I think on a bad young team, he's the kind of guy who will run the court, who will get exciting transition plays, who will force turnovers.
Yes.
Is that actually like a good play on a playoff team? Probably not, but, you know,
yeah, 16,
not everyone is going
16
to be.
16 is right where I would start be okay taking, like, this one. Because, look, he is a crazy athlete. I mean, he's actually not very big, though, so actually he's not as good of an athlete as people act because as everyone who like you understands, like you, an athlete is about, you know, how athletic and quick you are compared to your size is really what athleticism is truly. And he's way smaller than we thought he was originally. So all the stuff he was doing is less impressive.
He's going to have to play some point probably, which he really can't.
Yeah.
But that's part of the issue. See, I actually, out of those three, I'm easily the highest on Shai.
Yep.
And I watched a lot of Kentucky this year. And his feel for the game was just really impressive to me. When Kentucky was playing well, it seemed like Shai had the ball on a string.
And I
get guys to the ball in their spot. I understand the sort of concern people have is that he's Michael Carter Williams. You know, he's a tall point guard who is good in transition but can't really shoot. My thoughts are he's not a good shooter, but he's a better shooter than Michael Carter Williams.
A better shooter than, well, about similar shooter to Sexton right now. I think they shot very similar splits.
He has like 5 inches on Sexton, which helps, but Sexton is definitely a lot stronger right now. But personally, I like Shai the best out of those guys. Just continuing to go down through, I have a list here. The other guys who might be picked in the lottery or right after the lottery, you got Lonnie Walker, who I like still. I think that, but I like him in the sense that I could see him eventually being a guy who runs a bench unit. Pretty easy to see him as like, you know, you're comfortable. He might be like a Will Barton.
Yeah, I could see that.
And he was really highly ranked coming into his freshman
season.
That's
what I like
about
him a lot.
Miami had some injuries this year, but he did some good things for them. He was forced to move around different positions as a result of their injuries, which I think didn't allow him to showcase what he can really
do. I think
Lonnie Walker could have the highest
upside of anyone taken picks like 11 through 14. I think he could just
Here's the thing. You're going to hear a lot of like, is he the Donovan Mitchell of this year's draft? And the problem with that narrative is that there isn't a Donovan Mitchell of every draft, because if there were, those guys wouldn't be picked there. You can't just expect a star rookie of the year to come out of the 11, 12, 13.
They happen. Every single year, there's one amazing player in that 11 to 14 range.
Booker, Giannis
at 15, Kawhi, I'm 15, that like 11 to
15. It is likely that there will be someone in this range who's an all-star, but to sort of make that Donovan Mitchell comparison is still a little unfair.
Yes.
And I also don't really think it's Lonnie Walker,
to
be honest, but I do think he's a contributor. I'm pretty low on Robert Williams.
Yeah, I don't love him. Don't love him. Concerning because he just didn't show enough. And
undersized,
I don't think. And
also, he's got to be a five. He's the kind of guy who gets listed at 4 or 5. No, he's got to be a five. But he seems like a bench player.
And his ceiling doesn't seem that high. And there's so many fives that, the risk of him just being a complete bust with his ceiling not seeming that high, even though he's like a great athlete, is concerning to me.
Yep. I don't really get or particularly like Dante DiVincenzo from Villanova. Again, watched him play a lot because they were a really good college team. Villanova does. You know, like I said, I like Mikhail Bridges. I like Omari Spellman even with like a late first, early second.
I like Jalen Brunson.
Give a flyer to Jalen Brunson for sure. I think Villanova does a good job of, you know, they play an NBA style offense. Like they spread you out. They shoot a lot of threes. But I just, DiVincenzo was like, he was not that important for them this year. And then he got really hot in the tournament. I think you want to be kind of wary of those guys.
Let's make the pro argument for him, though.
Sure.
He can get his jumper off. It's almost like Zach Levine-like in the way he can get his jumper off, like over defenders.
He's a really good athlete.
He plays, you know, pretty good defense, too. Like, he could just be a really great 3-and-D guy who can get his shot off with ease. And there's a lot of value in that. It's almost like he could almost be like, you know who I like as his comp? Gerald Green. Like, that's a really interesting comp.
Yeah. So he starts to make sense to Washington at 15,
yeah.
Milwaukee at 17. If DiVincenzo goes to San Antonio, people are going to start to love him.
So I just think, as we say with all these guys, there's ways it works and there's ways it doesn't. And, of course, the way it doesn't work with him is he just got hot. He's not as good of a shooter as he showed in the tournament. And he's just not that smart of a basketball player.
Remember Dante DiVincenzo.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But there's also ways it can work. And that's, like, the beauty of the draft. What I really love about, like, thinking about draft prospects is there's just this, like, world of possibilities. And you have to be – you can't lock yourself into there's only one result with all these guys.
This guy
you know?
Is what he is.
He is what he is. Yeah. That's just not the
there's
way it is.
There's a range of outcomes for every guy. A guy who I would like – think he could make sense to Atlanta at 19, although he also would contribute a lot to a good team. Kyrie Thomas from Creighton, just a 3-and-D guy.
There's a
role for him there in the league. You can definitely see it. The guy who I could see being the sort of like surprise star from this range,
the Donovan Mitchell of the draft.
Right. Well, when I
stay
say
tuned
it,
after this
laugh.
Break,
yeah,
for
exactly.
This Donovan Mitchell.
This
of
guy
the draft.
Couldn't have less in common with Donovan Mitchell, but other than the name, I guess Mitchell Robinson. It was just this huge, huge guy who didn't end up playing in college this year because of kind of like some sketchy behind the scenes stuff. But that doesn't really matter. The point is,
he's huge and he can move really well for how huge he is.
And
so you can definitely see him, Mitchell Robinson, as a stifling defensive guy, a guy who you run screen and roll with, and he just runs to the rim.
He keeps getting mocked at 25. The Lakers is a really common mock spot for him. And I just, like,
you're looking at, like, if everyone goes to the Lakers and they just need some centers,
yeah,
they become like a Warriors type team,
yeah,
where they have really top heavy and then they need some minimum guys.
And Mitchell Robinson could, like, pick and roll with LeBron.
Playing with guys who are good right away. Could be like the Jordan Bell of this draft.
Yeah, that could be really fun. That's a fun comparison.
Let's see. Other guys that I do and don't like in that same kind of range, I like Chandler Hutchinson from Boise State. I think he's going to be able to shoot. He is old, you know, but he makes sense going to a good team. He's going to be able to stand in the corner, hit threes. Gary Trent Jr. can shoot, so I like him.
Why is he projected so low? I don't understand.
It makes no sense to me. He shot 40% on threes, has NBA pedigree.
And he's 19.
There's no way he's not.
He's 19. Player. And he's just like, look, his defense was bad at Duke. Everyone on that Duke team was bad at, like,
and
the,
they had
like,
to run.
The,
they went to a 2-3 zone because of Marvin Bagley. Let's call a spade a spade. We didn't talk about this during the Bagley section for whatever reason, but Bagley is so bad on defense that Coach K played a 2-3 zone. That's not Gary Trent's fault.
Trent,
I wouldn't mind Trent in the late lottery, but you never see him mocked there.
Well, I would never. I just want to take
him
like
because
lottery?
Of the value. Because
the value,
you wouldn't
basic,
want him to
yeah.
take an outlier like that.
But
you just trade down. But you never know. All it has to be is one other team. Like, if you really love Trent and you're Denver, I mean,
true.
I wouldn't mind it.
True.
I just wouldn't.
I mean, I would always be trying to trade down, I guess. And this is dumb because this is actually the way asset value works. But from my head, if you trade down and you pick up additional assets, then it becomes way less damning to reach on a guy, you know. But that's sort of true if you just think about, because the surplus assets you generated, you end up, like, instead of trading down to like 21, it's like in value you trade down to 28 and you're much more comfortable taking a guy at 28 than 21 or whatever. You know, like, there are ways you can talk yourself into this.
I mean, dude, like, I saw a mock where Gary Trent Jr. went to Golden State at 28. Like, what a problem. They're just going to get another guy.
He's so perfect.
He's so perfect for what they need because they have as much shooting as they have in their starting lineup. They need more bench
shooting. I've seen mocks with him going like 45 in the second round. It's just like that one makes no sense to me.
I mean, if Grayson Allen gets picked before Gary Trent, I'm going to have a conniption.
Yeah, that would be shocking to me.
Other guys who I like, now we're starting to get into like the second round range. I've loved Zanon Musa all year. Talked about Zanon Musa a lot. You know, my friends think I'm crazy. I have this weird obsession with the 19-year-old Bosnian, but just the way he can shoot off the dribble, it's very clear to me how that translates. That's what the league is. You know, you watch his highlights and he's pulling up and he's like, granted, he's playing in the Croatian league, but he's pulling up from like 30 feet and just making it rain on guys. He's got a great or bad or both attitude.
Got a great name. I mean, imagine like the in-house like announcer every time he hits a long three, just
Musa,
or just being like Musa. You know, like there's so many amazing ways it could go.
Totally. So I can definitely see him having kind of like a moment in the league. He also needs to get drafted high enough to where he actually like comes over. I'm a little worried that Musa could turn into a draft and stash, even though it seems like he wants to come.
I'm
excited to see him.
Another thing I really like about him is how he's 6'8". He can has the height and everything, so he's not going to be that bad on defense, and he can shoot like that.
Yep.
A lot of value
in that.
And athleticism.
At least it seems that way. Playing against less
it's hard to project, especially in lower levels of Europe. It's a little easier to see how good of an athlete someone is when they're playing like in the ACB we've seen them against other guys we have like a barometer of, versus when you're in like, you know, the Adriatic lead or you're in the Croatian lead, it's like, I don't know who these guys are.
I like Shake Milton out of SMU a lot.
I like him a lot too.
He's another guy where, and that's part of why I like Gilgeous Alexander too, but I just think we kind of underrate height for guards. The ability to see over defenders, to see passing lanes is a really
big problem. The problems it creates on defense, the way it makes you less of a liability on defense. So
you get switched on to bigger guys, you can hold your own.
And I like Shake Milton because he can shoot. I like him like playing next to a guy like Ben Simmons or Giannis Antetokounmpo playing the one while those guys control a lot of the ball handling duties. But he can like space the floor. Reminds me a lot of George Hill, possibly, as like an upside ceiling.
I like that. Although, you know,
his
he's
downside,
got like 3 inches on George Hill too. That's the thing.
Yeah, his downside reminds me of Wade Baldwin, who went to the Grizzlies.
That's
and just
a definite concern. Baldwin does not seem like he's going to be an NBA player.
Nope.
We talked about him, but I would definitely give Jalen Brunson a look.
I wouldn't mind. Here's how much I like Jalen Brunson. I wouldn't mind him going 23 to the Pacers. I like him a lot. I think he would help the Pacers.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the range you're starting to talk about, right? Where it's like Brunson will be in that range. Aaron Holiday, who for some reason got a green room invite to the draft.
Yeah, that was surprising.
I think we both really liked Aaron Holiday him out of UCLA when we thought Aaron Holiday was going to be like a second-round pick. You think the Suns would take him at 16?
Well, he came in for a second workout. The hope is they view him as like a pick at 31, and I think he's going to fall. But at 16...
Somebody better is going to be there at 16. Somebody's going to fall. It's going to be a Lonnie Walker or something.
Yeah.
Maybe not, but...
Tough pill to swallow to take Aaron Holiday at 16 for me.
Wouldn't love it. Other guys I like...
Who do we like... Who do you like for the Nets at 28? We haven't been able... Because the Nets have so limited draft capital.
We haven't talked about them that much. Yeah. Or at 29, right?
Or 29, yes. 29.
So... A lot of these guys, unfortunately, aren't going to be there. And the guy, I mean, look, like a Chandler Hutchison is a good role player, and so I like him in that range to help a good team.
But you want
in terms of who I want to see, you know, like again, Jalen Brunson, I like him on a good team. So who would I want to see the Nets take at 29? Who I think is like a high ceiling guy.
Yeah,
honestly, that makes a lot of sense as a Zanon Musa destination.
Oh man, I mean, I don't think he's going to be there, but if he goes to the Nets, that would be awesome because they would just be like shoot as many threes as you possibly can.
Exactly, just like if you're open, you better shoot.
Oh man, all right, so that's definitely our new hope for the draft. We want Musa to go to the Nets.
Another international guy who I like, but not as much, is Ile Okobo from France.
Yep. He's been really rising up draft boards.
He's been a riser for sure, partially because
he had a 40-point game, and then he just kind of everyone's like, oh yeah, I've liked him for a while.
Yep. The guy who I compared him to, except he's going to be drafted way later, is Frank Ntilikina, where he's like a short, tough guard with a long wingspan. He's clearly going to get a lot of steals and play good defense right away. And then if the shooting comes around, great. It's hard to tell exactly. I mean, you know, people like his pull-up jumper, which, okay, is he going to have NBA three range right away?
A pull-up jumper is only good if you're pulling up from behind the three-point line. Otherwise, it's a bad shot.
Exactly. I mean, how about Kevin Herter from Maryland to Brooklyn?
Love it.
Another guy who's just going to shoot.
Reminds me a lot of Joe Harris.
It could be a Joe Harris replacement.
Yeah, well, I would love for them to bring back Joe Harris, of course, but if they lose him, because like, look, they should not give Joe Harris $8 million a year. If he gets offered the full mid-level, let him walk.
That are going to want Joe Harris. But Herter makes sense in that same role. And then you start to talk about, you know, I'm not particularly into like Grayson Allen there, but that could be a decent look. Kata Bates-Diop, I've soured on a lot because I'm just not sure. I liked him in college. Like I said, he had a fun season. It was fun to watch this year. He carried that Ohio State team and they were better than they were supposed to be. Just not sure if his shooting is legit or if he just had a nice hot streak.
Yeah.
There's some more guys I like in the second round, but I wouldn't want to see them picked at 28.
What about Anfernee Simons?
Anthony Simmons.
Is it Simmons or Simons? Because it's only one M, so I think it's Simons, but it might be Simmons.
Might just be like a different spelling of Simmons. I mean, that guy, I'm not going to pretend like I know much about him.
Great YouTube.
I know
really
he's got
great
a fucking
YouTube.
And like, I'll be rooting for him. You know, I like anybody with a weird story and a good YouTube. That's pretty much what my draft analysis comes down to.
Who's someone who's being projected kind of, you know, mid to late teens, early 20s, who you're really low on, who you don't like? We're talking a lot about guys you like. Who are guys who are projected a little higher, who you're really sour on?
Well, we talked about DiVincenzo. I wouldn't personally be excited about that. I don't really get it with Troy Brown from Oregon. I think he's supposed to be a better shooter than he was this year is kind of the idea there. But I worry about that because the games matter a lot to me.
Because, I mean, he shot 29% from three.
Exactly. And he's a wing. Like, I wouldn't touch that. So those are the main guys I would be kind of staying away. And then, you know, Sexton, he doesn't count because he's projected higher, but I'd be staying away from Sexton. I'd be staying away from Robert Williams.
What are your thoughts on...
I'd be reluctant to take Zaire Smith.
What are your thoughts on Melvin Frazier? From Tulane, guy who kind of, you know, plays good defense but can't shoot at all and is already almost 22, but like has been kind of getting some late first hype. But it concerns me, it's one of those guys, like if he learns how to shoot, of course it works, but he just... He's a zero from the shooting right now.
You know, I mean, would you rather have him than like a Jacob Evans from Cincinnati?
No, I definitely
would. I would rather have Evans, and I've seen him projected in that same. So once you get to the second round, maybe Melvin Frazier makes some sense.
As a
guy who I like, even though he has like very little upside, just because it's pretty obvious what he can do to help you right now, is Javon Carter from West Virginia.
Yep.
Just long college career. We know exactly what he is. He's going to play good defense. And definitely can like be a bench player.
Can shoot.
He'll be one of those guys where like I won't be surprised at all if he goes undrafted. And then just is on a team next year anyway. And it's like, oh yeah, of course this guy is an NBA player
who can shoot and like can really shoot and just like experience good. Yeah,
but he's like 23.
Yeah.
So. you know, that limits his ceiling. I like Justin Jackson from Maryland a lot.
Oh, absolutely. I can't believe he's falling so far. I mean,
it's crazy how far he's falling.
He's been mocked at the end of the second. Yeah, he would have been a lottery pick out of last year.
People must be really worried about his health.
Yeah.
That's the only real thing that makes sense there. I'm sure you watch this guy because I know you watch Big Ten, Tony Carr from Penn State.
Yep.
I mean, he's legit. He's got the size. He was like probably one of the best players in the Big Ten this year. He's, again, seems like he's going to play defense in the league, especially as a second round pick. You kind of have to.
I think what stands out to me the more I dive into this draft, and once again, you're deeper into this draft than I am, a lot of these guys, it's like, oh yeah, I've seen them play and I sort of like it. And my general stance, I'm a pretty big first impression guy on prospects because I just think guys who are going to make in the league stand out in college almost immediately, and you see it, and guys who aren't don't.
Yep.
But my big takeaway from this draft, the more I think about it, is the more I like it. And the message on this draft was that it really falls off after the top like 8 to 10 guys, and I agree with that. But then I think it falls off, and then there's like this plateau for a long time. It's just
which
guys
are they? Some of these guys in that later range, some of the deep cuts of this draft will be really good.
I would hate to have a pick that's like 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 in this draft. If I had any of those picks, I'd be trying to trade down because I really think there's like a tier from like 10 to like 25 where everyone is the same.
Pretty similar. Yep, I agree with that. That makes a lot of sense to me. Anybody else we haven't talked about? I like Diallo from Kentucky.
We should talk Alonzo Trier. We both really like Alonzo Trier. We think that dude can shoot.
The hate for Alonzo Trier doesn't make any sense at all.
No. He was probably the best player on that Arizona team, and he just can shoot, and he's plays defense.
He's played with NBA guys. That stuff matters to me, honestly. He's played well.
He played so well with Lauri Markkanen. Their like synergy numbers were off the charts last year.
Really just like a good pairing. So, I mean, Trier, he's not going to be a first-round pick. No. He could not even get drafted.
But I mean, I would be happy with any of our teams taking him with their second-round pick. I would love him to Brooklyn at 40, or 40 or 45. Yep, love that fit. I love him to the Kings
Brooklyn
at 37.
Could come away. I mean, I don't know if Brooklyn will keep all their picks, or they might. Again, they make sense for draft and staff. Maybe that guy Kuroks from Latvia or something. But Brooklyn could come away with a haul because, like we said, we think this is a deep draft. It's weirdly, I mean, there's a big fall off after the top 10, but then a lot of good potential role players. Other guys, I like Diallo from Kentucky. I like Malik Newman from Kansas.
All these guys are guys who, like, we can just see it working out. Like, Malik Newman was a top, I think, 5-10 recruit. And I just, like, sign me up for taking that.
He's played with other good players who have overshadowed him a little bit.
Yep.
Anyway, is there anything else we want to talk about, or are we pretty much done here?
No, Trayvon Duvall, if he ever learns how to shoot, is going to be really good. Yep. The beauty of this draft, I think, is there's, even at the top, almost everyone, I could see a path for that being really good. I could see a path for that being really bad.
Talked about some of the higher floor guys. That's how I feel about Mikal Bridges and Wendell Carter, but it's still always possible.
It's always possible, and I think this is a particularly tough draft.
I mean, this event is why this podcast exists. Like, this is why it's fun to follow young teams because there's so much variance and randomness, and you could randomly get a star with a late pick. You can have the number one pick and take a huge bust.
And
it's out of all of the whole NBA, this seems like the most luck incorporated.
And like the lottery is the most luck, I guess.
The lottery is literally
all
a lottery.
but like the draft is the most important day for every NBA team almost, but particularly especially for our teams. Because
I can't wait to do our recap pod once we know who everyone's got.
You can jumpstart your entire rebuild. You can speed it up a year to two with a really good draft, and you can set it back 2 years with a really bad draft. That's how important this is. It can really have a 4-year fluctuation on your timeline, a single draft.
I mean, look at where our teams are at, you know? None of these teams, we think the closest team to being sort of out of this abyss is the Suns.
But everyone else
is
in for the long run.
Oh, huge. And the only way, you know, you're the Magic at 6, the only way you're not going to be bad for the next 3 or 4 years
is you hit
a
home run. It needs to be a home run.
So, yeah, the stakes are high. We're looking forward to it. Connor and I will be watching together. Also, check out our Twitter.
Yes.
Please follow and retweet and throw likes and everything. We'll definitely be tweeting a lot about the draft.
Yes, definitely.
It's at THNBA Podcast.
Yep. Right? TH for Truly Horrible, an NBA podcast. Rate and review on iTunes. We like to read your reviews, you know.
Right, we're going for the freight elevator.
Yeah, exactly. The freight elevator. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening. This is our longest podcast ever. And
that's because we love the draft.
We love the draft.
Thank you for tuning in.
Yep.
Have a good one.